You won't know I'm coming for you until it's too late. There won't be a sign that I'm there until I'm there. And once I'm there, you can't get away from me. You can't escape me. If I know your name, I know your face, you're done. I will be your nightmare. I will be the reaper that comes for you. You cannot get away from me. I will be the death card. I am the death card for those people. And if anybody's listening, knock it the fuck off.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Redacted Podcast. I am your host, Matt Bender. This interview is probably one of the most intense interviews I've ever done. We just got done recording it, you know, a few hours ago, and I had to kind of collect my thoughts in order to do this prologue. Before you listen to this episode, there's three points I need to address. The first one is I definitely need to put a trigger warning out there. This interview contains very graphic depictions and descriptions of sexual assault, rape, violence, and murder. So if you're sensitive to any of that, this is probably not the episode for you. It's hard. It is a hard subject. Sorry. The second point we need to address here is credibility. So when this guest first approached me for the story, it sounded almost unbelievable. And we've all seen, you know, To Catch a Predator, shows like that, and there's different YouTube channels where people go after and kind of hunt pedophiles and out them and, you know, call the police. This isn't that. This is more like Dexter. So when I first spoke with him, I was skeptical. And this is before we recorded the interview. And the more I spoke with him, the things he was saying, the way he described events and different things he's seen and experienced, the more credible he became. And typically, all of our guests are anonymous, but we will still vet them beforehand. We will still try to find some corroborative evidence or pictures or employee badges or things like that so that we don't get people coming on the show and just giving out bad information. For this guest, and for obvious and legal reasons, we didn't want any of that. I didn't want to have any corroborative evidence. And as you listen to it, you'll understand why. Also, as you listen to this episode, form your own opinion on the credibility and whether or not what he's saying is accurate, which kind of brings me to my third point, vigilante justice and the continuing problem we have in this country with sex trafficking. So, I mean, and it's no secret. It's all over the mainstream media. There is a sex trafficking crisis, especially at the southern border. And there's estimates that anywhere between 2 and 500 gangs are involved in bringing underage minors into this country for the purpose of sex slavery. And that's, sorry, that's disturbing. That's extremely disturbing. And this guy, this guest that we interview, is doing something about it, for lack of a better phrase. And there's others, as you'll hear, there's others that are. And I mean, that's no secret. There are people like that out there that are doing this. And whether you think it's right or wrong, it's happening. but it also shows the shortfalls of our government and our law enforcement. We shouldn't have to have people out there doing this. This should be taken care of. This should be solved, but it's not. And you can answer your own questions on why it's not getting solved. But at any rate, he's out there. He's doing this. Right or wrong, it's what's happening. And that's not our job here, is to determine right or wrong. But I, for one, am glad that there are organizations and there are private people that are trying to fill the gaps that the government is leaving behind. So without further ado, enjoy the show. Thanks for coming on. You have a kind of a really interesting, and I mean, I don't know if you'd call it a hobby or a side project or a mission. I guess hobby is kind of a dumb word.
I think it's a good mix of all of the above.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, what would you call it basically? What would you identify that as?
I look at it as just like a little side job.
And
I think word it good with a little side project. I think it's a little project of mine that I do.
Okay. And what is it? What is that kind of called or labeled? Is that pedophile hunting or what would you call that?
I don't really have a specific term I call it. I just do what I do and I go about my daily life. Kind of living that double life. I got my regular lifestyle, my family, my job, and then my nighttime little side job is going after people that hurt children.
And I know that we talked that you were in the military first, so you served in the, was it the Marines?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And then you served overseas in combat zones.
Yes, I did. I've been to Kabul, Afghanistan, while I was serving as a force reconnaissance Marine.
Okay. And what was that like? What was some of your training and some of the experiences you had over there?
It was interesting. We went over there kind of around the time frame when the Afghan refugees were getting pulled to America, and we went on a tactical response after some troops were killed, and it was more. We're doing a lot of just kind of foot patrols, making sure nothing happened while our guys were doing humanitarian work as far as like helping refugees and things like that. And upon entering different villages, we saw different things, experienced a lot of different things, different like fights, combat zones. And like how you and I spoke about when we entered the one house and found several men attacking a young boy, which kind of sparked a lot of what I do now.
And that's something that I think a lot of people don't realize is kind of culturally common in Afghanistan or in.
Yeah, it is. It is unfortunately extremely common.
What was your experiences and what did you kind of learn about that? And was that also kind of a shock to you coming from here where that's not obviously culturally acceptable? What was that like?
We were told about it in advance before we went out there that we may see victims of rape, murder, things like that. We were told there's a high likeliness that we would see it over there. However, in 9 times out of 10, the U.S. troops that are in a unit like mine are not allowed to engage those offenders. And it's unfortunate, but we're not allowed. Because a lot of things, if we're on a private mission, and we go over there and see something and we engage that'll give up our mission And then once we leave, it'll turn around and happen again. So we're unfortunately, we're not allowed to react to certain things or allowed to engage certain people. But every now and then you'll get a little time where you're kind of alone and you can kind of do something quietly. But we knew about it going in. We were told in advance to expect that, to see that kind of thing. But once you see it in person, it's definitely a shock having to witness it and not be able to act on it.
Yeah, and that was, that was against, I remember when we were over there in, what was it, 02, 03. It was against the rules of engagement. You know, yeah. you were not supposed to kind of involve yourself in, I guess, what you'd call civilian matters. You know,
exactly.
If they're not attacking us, if they're not messing with our stuff, if they're not, doing anything towards us or terrorism or anything.
Exactly,
like that.
It could be considered a war crime.
Yeah, we were not supposed to engage them, and I know myself and a lot of. A lot of guys just, would see horrible things, hear horrible things, witness horrible things, and you kind of have your hands tied. And there you are. I mean, you're strapped up. I mean, you're locked and loaded. You have the entire force of the United States military behind you. You got equipment, you got intel, you got air support.
And yeah, you got full capability to do whatever you need to do. You just can't.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's frustrating, and I don't think people realize how often. I mean, we would even see things like they had the opium thing going on, or the poppy, heroin, and that stuff was getting made into heroin and sent back to the States, and killing the kids we went to high school with.
Exactly.
So it's frustrating. Like, this is going on right under our noses, and there's not shit we can do about it, because we'll end up in fucking Leavenworth.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. It sucks, because I feel like a lot of guys that, like a lot of vets that have killed themselves or suffer mentally, isn't even necessarily combat related. It's things they saw that they couldn't stop. It'll mess you up watching somebody who you know is innocent, or somebody who may have taken a slice of bread because they don't have anything over there, getting murdered for it, or getting their hands cut off or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's tough to know you couldn't do anything. You feel helpless.
Yeah, you come home and it bothers you knowing that, like, you had to leave those people over there dealing with that, and you had full capability to help them, but you couldn't.
Yeah, yeah. And that, I think you kind of hit on a good point there, because, well, we saw horrific things that the people would do over in Afghanistan in particular. We also, we liked the innocent people. We wanted to save them. We wanted to help them. We didn't want the regular, civilians suffering. That's not, that was something that was hard to watch. We didn't want to see a 15-year-old girl get stoned. That's horrifying, and not be able to do anything, because in our kind of sense and judgment, that's not right.
No,
we're not used to that. We have a relatively docile society as far as that goes. We don't stone people. We don't allow the open harvesting of drugs. We don't allow open pedophilia. We don't allow a lot of the things that they allow culturally.
Unless you're California.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a whole fucked up can of worms itself. But yeah, that was always something that I think a lot of people don't understand, that those of us who went over there, that's some of the most haunting things. It is.
There's nothing more haunting than seeing, especially children, in pain, which is why I do what I do now. It's extremely, it'll haunt you, it'll keep you up at night, knowing that you got kids at home, but there's some kid over there the exact same age getting victimized and tortured to death, and there's not a damn thing you could do about it, and you had to watch it happen. And it sucks when those people see you, and they're hoping that you step in and help them, but you can't.
What was,
what was the first kind of encounter you had where you would witness something like that? Could you describe that a little for us?
Yeah, the first encounter, I actually did go against the engagement rule, and I did engage the person. We were able to do it quietly and have the mission accomplished and be out of there by the time it was realized, which we had to face that when it came, because it eventually came to light. But we were doing a regular patrol. We heard a kid crying, turning into kind of like a pain type scream. And we went and entered, forced our way into a building in a little village in Cabal, where we found three grown men assaulting a little boy, probably about 6 or 7 years old. And we set down our stuff. As soon as we walked in, they stopped, kind of put their hands up, because there were three Marines standing in there, four Marines standing in there. Plus, we had the rest of the firing squad was sitting right outside the building. I had a team of seven guys that we were walking through. And we went in that little room, set our stuff down, and proceeded to pretty much beat them half to death. Because if we fired a shot, that would cause problems. That was too loud. And even though our rifles were suppressed, that'll still make a loud enough pop where it could be heard by where our command center was. We proceeded to beat them within damn near an inch of their life until we resulted to just taking out K-bars. Once K-bars came out, one of my firing team leads, removed the kid so that he wouldn't see that kind of thing, wrapped him up in a little jacket that was sitting in the room, and then they escorted him out of that little building. By the time we were done and came outside, he was already gone, so he went off with, got taken somewhere else in the village. But we did God's work in that room and made sure that those guys aren't wasting the air of those children in that town anymore. And got back to command center. They asked how the patrol went, anything to report to the following guys, and it was like, nope, everything's good. All that's fine. They kind of kept it dusted under the rug a little bit, because we were able to engage that quietly until we finished what our job was while we were there and came home.
Wow. I mean, and everyone else that was with you was obviously probably feeling the same way.
Yeah.
I don't think you get a lot of argument. Like, I know how combat units roll, and I don't think you had a lot of people saying, nah. Like,
we had one guy that was a little bit leery of the situation. He was new. It was his first trip, first unit, everything. He'd only been in for probably about a year. He hadn't experienced much yet. And so he was a little bit leery on the subject. He didn't want to get in trouble. But he was one of the ones that waited outside for a reason. We kind of walked in, looked at each other, and kind of gave a little nod of like, yeah, let's do this. Like, fuck it. We have to watch enough. We're not going to watch this one. And listening to that child scream, we weren't going to turn around and walk out of the room and shut the door and let it happen.
And I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, that would hear this might think that they would react differently either way. I think some people think they would show restraint. And it's probably one of those things you can't imagine until you're in that situation.
It absolutely is. Cause that's conversations we've had. Like, what if we see this kind of thing? And we have the way we said we would probably react. But once you're in the situation, it's heat of the moment. You don't really realize everything that happened until afterwards. You're like, damn, that really just happened. You know, like we just did that. Now we got to cover our asses. Otherwise we're going to end up in the brig.
And then on the other side of it, I mean, there's a lot at stake there, because you could end up in jail. I mean, you're going to lose your career. You're going to, you know, lose whatever you've worked for, and you could end up in jail. So on the other side, where some people think they might show restraint, I think other people that may be listening to these type of stories would think, yeah, I'd kill the motherfucker too. But
yeah, there's a lot
at stake.
So there still was a little bit of hesitation. That was the first life that I ever took, and so there's hesitation once the decision was made to actually end their life, because it was like we could just beat them half to death, but once they're recovered, they're going to do the same thing again once we're gone. So once the decision was made of, okay, knives are coming out, then it's like, okay, this is really happening. Like, are we actually going to do this right now? And there was that slight hesitation, little look at each other, a little, not really discussion because you don't want your voice heard, but it's, we're going to do this. Okay, let's just send it. Let's go all the way. Like, we're already this far in. We're going to go ahead and finish the job.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Mike Tyson says, you know, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And
yeah,
I think you guys got punched in the face a little, and you made your decisions. And
yeah,
it's exactly. Hard to Everybody, second guess. It's hard to sit here and second guess the decisions and the actions that.
Yeah, I don't regret it. I don't regret it at all. It did come back to us on base. Once we were in the States, we were back home for probably 4 or 5 months, and it came up. They held a battalion meeting and discussed the situation, but then never decided to pinpoint the Marines by name. So it was kind of like they knew about it. They agreed with the decision, but they had to have some sort of repercussion to prevent any kind of battalion issue. So they kind of had the discussion. They knew who it was, but didn't pinpoint it. They said they didn't find which Marine squadron it was, but it was pretty obvious when we were getting eyeballed by command. We knew exactly, they knew what was happening, but it gets to a point where like they understood what we did and why we did it, you know? And I think a lot of people that don't experience that a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I'd kill that motherfucker. I think everybody wants to be the badass, wants to be the hero until it's time to be the hero. And then it's kind of, now you got to see how you're going to react in the situation, you know?
Well, yeah, that's, that goes without saying. I think people like to armchair quarterback situations like this all the time and think that they would. It's kind of with your story and, you know, with what you do now, I think it's one of those things that it's controversial, but it's hard to imagine. And I think everyone has their thought on it without any action behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And
everyone's got an opinion.
Hearing this, you know, I've never done anything like that specifically. So it's even hard for me to kind of wrap my head around it and understand, because yeah, there's a lot at stake, and I mean you're taking a life,
yeah,
and that's not something that's light. I mean, taking a life of someone who's trying to kill you in those situations, you know, that our soldiers have faced. That makes a little more sense, because that's a little, okay, it's you or it's me right now.
Yeah.
But when you get into these right and wrong situations, these situations with just pure evil people that aren't harming you, they weren't harming you, but it's, yeah, that's a hard one.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, it's our job to protect the people who can't protect themselves. I think if you're a capable person of protecting yourself and other people, you should at all costs, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we risked a lot, but that little boy's not getting hurt anymore. So would the punishment have been worth it? In our eyes, yes. But it's a very touchy subject, you know. Like, I wouldn't have frowned upon a different group of Marines walking out to save their career. But I would have been more pleased if another group did the same thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that, and I think that's important too, is, you know, you couldn't necessarily judge someone for not taking the same actions.
Yeah, of course. Cause I understand the risk that goes into it. And I get a lot of guys don't want to risk their career, their family, all that kind of thing for doing something like that. So I absolutely would not frown upon a group necessarily following orders and not engaging it, but I think the vast majority in that situation would have probably done something similar, knowing the circumstances of, okay, we're quiet, we're in a private building, there's no one here, we can do this quietly. I think a lot of Marines would have done similar actions.
Was that the first time you had witnessed anything like that, or was that the first time you'd taken action?
Both.
Okay.
Both. That was the first time I actually witnessed like a child assault happening it's happened in my family before. I'm not going to say like a specific family member, but it's happened to family members before in the past when I was younger, to a 7-year-old family member of mine. So I knew of it, and it bothered me, and I wanted to do something about it, but I was a child. You know, there's not much I could really do.
Yeah.
And I went in the military at 17, and my first trip to Afghanistan, I saw that. So it was like, okay, this time I could do something, you know.
It kind of connected a dot for you.
Exactly. It was more of like, it was kind of relieving. Like, it's like, okay, I wasn't able to protect the family member then and stop it, but here I can. And so I took that opportunity once it was handed to me.
And I'm sure that people who do similar things to what you do, and I've kind of seen it, that there seems to be a recurring theme of having experienced it, or having someone that you love having experienced, you know, some kind of an assault.
It connects it to you personally, which drives you a little bit more towards it, versus just doing it to try to be a good person. I think if you experience something, there's that personal connection in it, which drives you to do things differently, whether that be more brutally, more extensively. If you've experienced it, you take it a lot more personally.
Yeah. And I mean, thank God there's a lot of people out there that haven't experienced that, or haven't had a loved one experience that. And it's hard to understand, because the feeling of helplessness, I'm sure you had, and, you know, it's traumatic, because that's, you know, a little bit what we were talking about, witnessing things overseas that you can't do anything about. If that goes back to your childhood, or, you know, to a loved one, to a family member, or even to yourself, I mean, that's traumatic, because you know what happened, and you couldn't do anything, or you had to watch, or you had to experience, and that just helplessness and feeling like a victim, and that, you know, just doubt and self-worth and everything that goes into that played into what shaped you.
Exactly.
So it was already kind of something that was top of mind.
Yes.
And you hear about this, and, you know, you get your briefings and you hear your things before you go into country, and you get information, and that just had to, you know, kind of write spark to the top of your mind, like, oh, damn. Like, you almost don't want to see that.
Yeah, I mean,
please, God, let me not see that.
Yeah, that's definitely a prayer that gets sent up, is I don't want to experience it, you know. I don't want to see it, because I know I can't do anything.
Yeah.
But me and my crew, once we were briefed, we were kind of like, yeah, if we see this shit, like, yeah, we're going to do something. Fuck that. Fuck the rules. But then obviously there were several things we saw, but we didn't engage. But once we had an opportunity to do it quietly and actually get it done, we obviously took that. But the thing is, like, you don't want to see it, but if somebody's going to see it, I'd rather it be guys like me, because guys like me, we'll be able to either do something, and if we can't do something, we'll be able to handle it mentally better than a lot of people. So, like, we don't want to see it. We pray every day that we don't have to witness that. And I pray every day that one day I'll be able to stop doing what I'm doing now, because it won't be a problem anymore. But if, as long as it's a problem, and as long as it's out there to be seen, I want it to be seen by guys like me that will be able to mentally actually handle that situation, versus somebody that's going to, you know, drive to some sort of severe depression or suicide, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's important too. It's a cross to bear.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I can't imagine. And yeah, that's fucked up, man. But a good way to put it is, I guess I'll take it. I'll do the dirty work. I'll get my hands dirty. So I can understand that. And just, you know, fighting terrorism for, you know, in some godforsaken country, you know, we'll go do it. And I think that's a common thing with all military dudes. And
yeah, absolutely.
Females too, women too. I said dudes.
Yeah, that's something that you understand when you sign that dotted line.
Yeah.
You understand that you're taking that responsibility for other people.
I'll take the nightmares. I'll take the dirty work. I'll take the injuries. I'll take the scars.
Yeah, exactly.
So in your time over there, did you have to do this more often? Was this something that happened or was that the...
That was actually the only time that happened with me. I wasn't over there that long. We were there on a tactical response. So that happened during a patrol, and then we came home. We did see several things of several different, you know, types of crimes happening that we couldn't stop. Over there, it's not looked at as different crimes, but here they're very brutal crimes. We did see several things, but that was the only one we engaged before we left.
Okay. What other, I mean, just similar situations with it, from what I remember, is primarily young boys that were being raped.
That's what we saw a lot too. When we didn't, that was, I think, what surprised us a lot more than anything was how much was happening to the boys more than girls.
I never even heard of anything happening to the girls besides the, well, they had like that virgin shaming. Like, they had that weird, and I don't know exactly what it was or if that was, I don't think it was nationwide, but I think it was specific villages or maybe something where they would, like, it was like a ritual where they would inspect the hymen. Had you heard of that?
Yeah, I have.
Of like a bride to be married, and if, you know, accusations of cheating or accusations of things like that weren't,
she'll be put to death.
They weren't dealt with nicely.
No, a lot of those girls got stoned.
Yeah.
I never witnessed anything happening to a girl, which is what kind of caught us off guard. Is everything we saw was with little boys, which is something a lot of people don't understand about those kind of countries too. Is the boys get, from what I saw, assaulted a lot more than the young girls over there.
Yeah, that was...
Even the young girls don't live a good life. The young girls don't live a good life by any means.
No.
They're married off as children and stuff. They don't live a good life by any means. But as far as public rapes and assaults and things like that, it was predominantly young boys that we saw. We've seen young boys getting grabbed up off the street and kidnapped or taken somewhere, probably to be trafficked. We've seen drug smuggling happening, the sexual assault on that little boy. It was predominantly all little boys and drugs that we saw.
The young boys over there don't have a good life either. They're kind of thrown to the wolves.
Pretty much, yeah. They're either raised up to be a part of the terrorist organizations over there, or they wish they were dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Or both.
So, after you got home, you know, you're back in the States. What kind of happened then? What were your thoughts? What were you thinking? What steps did you start taking? What things did you start doing? How did that play out?
I couldn't get the sound of the screams of that kid out of my head. It was kind of embedded. So, after that, I was like, I'm going to look into it, see if I can do anything on this side of the world, this side of the spectrum as a civilian, where I have a little bit more free range. I'm not as restricted by Department of Defense rules. And so I hopped online on a little chat website. And within 5 minutes, I had over 30 replies from men interested in kids. And I took the first, there was one that was about 10 miles from me or so from where I lived. I had him meet with what he thought was a child about 20 miles north of us, because I didn't want it being in the same vicinity where my family is, you know. I don't want to be walking through Walmart one day and bump into a family member of his or something. So we met at a park location. I thought the guy was kind of stupid, because you should kind of catch on to, you're not going to meet up with a kid at a park in the middle of the night surrounded by woods and no cars. But he took it and he went for it. We met there, and that one I actually did not kill. I gave that to the police. I got everything I needed. called a buddy of mine who's a detective, and then I was like, hey, I got this guy coming out here. This is what he's here to do. And they came in and they arrested him. He was prosecuted a year later on several charges, and it turned out he had been doing it for a long time. They found more stuff when they had searched his like electronics and everything.
That's excellent.
And he was prosecuted. I think got my blood going a little bit, you know?
So you were posing as a young girl.
Yeah, the first couple, because I didn't know how else to go about it at first.
So you're posing as a young girl and on, you know, some kind of a message board or dating site, something that's local.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are replying like, hey, let's meet up. Let's meet up.
Yeah.
And are you telling them the age right off the bat? Is that kind of bait?
Yeah.
So you're posing as an underage girl. Okay.
Yeah, that was how I started because I didn't know how else to really dive into that. I didn't know anybody at the time that was doing it. I had heard of things online, different organizations overseas, but I didn't know how else to go about it. But I'm like, okay, if I pose as a child, that I know will pull somebody in.
Yeah.
And depending on if that was their first time, like they were kind of just trying, testing the waters, or if they had been doing it for a while, would depict on what I would do to them. And
how would you kind of determine that?
Well, I'd play it off. Like, I think my first couple I played off as a kid, like, it's like, oh, well, I'm nervous. I've never been with a man before. Do you know how to take care of somebody like me? That kind of thing. It's like, oh yeah, I'll be gentle. This is my first time, but like, I'll do my best kind of thing. And then I could kind of pinpoint, like, I'd make little psychological comments or something that would kind of pinpoint whether or not they're being legit with me or not. And once I would make a determination whether or not I think that they're honest, I would depict their punishment based on that. And then there'd be several where I'd say the same thing of like, oh, I'm not experienced. Can you take care of me? Do you have experience taking care of somebody my size? And it's like, yes, I've got plenty. Don't worry. It's like, okay, cool. You're not going to feel too good later tonight.
Jeez. And like, how fucked up is it to have these conversations?
Oh, it's horrifying.
Like I can't imagine having to talk with people like that.
And you got to act it out. You got to play the part. Once you're in, you can't back out. You got to play that part. Man. So having to sit and chat is like the first one I ever did was a 12-year-old girl. And it's horrifying to think about, you know, it's like there's really a grown man out there right now doing this. Like a 35, 40-year-old grown man out there right now looking to victimize a child. And I think I did that kind of route for the first couple months. And I think in the first 3 months, I racked 21 people. Racked up 21 guys. 15 were arrests, 14 prosecutions.
In the first 3 months?
Yeah.
Jeez. You must have been busy. That's a fucking job.
Yeah, it became a very heavy addiction. Almost every other night I was trying to find somebody. Like, if I wasn't at work, I was trying to find somebody. If I was at work, I was on the phone trying to find somebody and schedule something.
And I think that describes it.
Yeah, that's what it became. It became an addiction of mine, being able to stop those kind of people. I was hooked. Like, my life revolved around it to the point I had to ease up a bit because it was like, it's cutting into my family. I'm not spending time with my daughter. I'm not spending time with my wife, like my son, nothing. It was like, I'm stuck on, I was just doing that 24/7. The second I was free, not doing something, I was doing it. And I eased up my first 3 months. It was a little over 20 people. And I remember of those 20, 14 were prosecuted. The rest were mine. And I determine whether or not I do give some to the police still, but it's very dependent on the evidence that I have, if that makes sense.
So if it's flimsy, if it's kind of like, if you know, but they're not going to be able to prosecute, is that kind of what you're talking about?
Exactly.
So
like if I've got picture proof and I know for a fact that they're going to get a lot of years racked up, then I'll go ahead and push that. But if I know what they're doing 100%, like you said, if I know what they're doing, but I don't have enough for them to get prosecuted, or there's even the slightest chance they could slip through prosecution, you're mine.
Man, that's so do you find some of these people are just, I mean, when you're, so obviously you're setting this all up online, you're chatting. Do you find like some of these people are just fucking around? They just want to talk about it. This is just like a,
yeah,
they're not going to do anything. I feel like there's got to be a lot of that too.
It's just a virtual fantasy. Yeah. Yeah, I've experienced a lot that just have that virtual fantasy. They don't even want pictures. They don't want to send pictures. They just want to like,
they want to chat,
that little role play conversation. Yeah.
Okay.
And those are very difficult for me because I can't do anything about them. I can't go after them because I have nothing to go off of. I can't give them to law enforcement. There's nothing to go off of on it.
No, like, it's just a matter of like, they're just, yeah, they're just not actually breaking a law.
Yeah, no, they're just, it's just a fantasy that they just want to talk to a child or tell a child what they want to do, but they will never actually do anything.
Yeah, it's fucked up, but it doesn't meet the criteria, so to speak.
Oh, if I knew where they were, I would absolutely go after them. That would absolutely meet my criteria.
Just the fact that they just want to talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. That would, now given that.
But not law enforcement criteria.
No.
Yeah.
Now given I may not kill them over it. I may not go after their life.
Yeah.
But I will go after things that are important, their career. I will mess with their life if I could get to them. And I've been able to track down one of those guys. But for the most part, it's so anonymous, you can't, when they're just trying to talk, there's not much you can do.
Yeah.
But they absolutely meet the criteria because at the end of the day, why are you thinking about children? Why exactly. Is a child your fantasy?
Exactly.
That shouldn't even be a fantasy to have, to even want to go talk about it. You shouldn't have any kind of arousal from somebody who can't take care of themselves, somebody who needs help getting dressed. You shouldn't have a fantasy about them.
Yeah, you're perpetuating the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Either way, you're not actually you're still part of the problem.
Yeah, you're part of the problem 100%. It makes it difficult though, cause I can't, there's nothing to go after. Like given I won't go after those people as heavy if I find them, but like I said, I will do things that will mess with their life. I may not kill them. They had some little fantasy and by the time they meet me, that fantasy's probably gone because once they experience me, it's okay. Yeah. I'm not thinking about that ever again. I'm done, but I'm going to make their life a living hell if I find them. Your family's going to know what you're doing. Your career is going to be shot. Like, I will come after you with everything, but I'm not going to come after your life.
So, what was the first one that you handled on your own? What was that one like? What was that? How did that go?
That one was interesting. That one was, I was meeting a 37-year-old man, and he was meeting with me as a grown man. Because he was interested in child, like he ran a big child pornography thing. And I had seen an ad for his for boudoir photography. And one of the little comments in the bottom of his thing was he was interested in meeting back up with a mother and her daughters. So I was like, oh, how old are the daughters? I have daughters. Like just kind of curious to see if that's what he was talking about or if it was just some little kink fantasy thing. And he said that they were 9 and 11. And I was like, oh, you do boudoir photography for youth. That's awesome. And I played it off like, yeah, I would love to have my children shot like that. And he was all about it. And so I was like, damn, okay, that was easy. Jeez. And I found out where he was and I asked him, I was like, well, listen, before I have my children around you, I would like to meet you first, that kind of thing, experience, like kind of see the kind of stuff you do, like that kind of thing. He was like, yeah, absolutely. Sent me his address. And then I was kind of, my first thought was, you just fucked up. Like, you just signed your death certificate.
Was this guy not paranoid?
No, he'd been doing it for years. And never really got caught.
He got too comfortable with it.
Exactly. He got very complacent. Jeez. And complacency kills. And that proved in this situation. I went to his house, walked in the door. He had it up on his TV. His house looked like a Jeffrey Dahmer house. There was one light that worked in the house. The carpet was stained. The walls had shit all over them. There was one back bedroom that had children's toys and ropes where you could see that where assaults were happening and things. The sheets were stained everywhere. And then Other than that bed that was in that room, there was one recliner in the house. That was it. And it was a room with like 50s wallpaper. It was like a disgusting, like serial killer house.
That sounds fucking horrifying.
It was disgusting. It smelled bad.
Brought their kids there?
Yeah.
For what? For money?
No, they paid him to do pornography shoots of their children.
What the fuck? And this is, don't give me the location exactly, but this is in the States.
Yes.
Jesus.
I can actually tell you the county. That situation has since been taken care of. That was actually in Polk County.
Oh my God.
It was just a little north of Lakeland.
So, I find it so hard to believe that parents would take their kids in for stuff like that.
Yeah, there was two parents that were prosecuted in that regard.
Jesus.
And both actually, the crazy part is both were women. It was two moms. Which makes it even more difficult when I was told about that. Was like, it's the mothers? Like, that's the last you'd expect. It is the one who's supposed to be the nurturing, loving parent.
Yeah.
But it was two mothers, and this guy had...
You may not know this, but were they, like, strung out, or were they single mothers, or, like, what was their...
I don't know.
It's so hard for me to imagine that situation.
Yeah, and I did, and he had it up on his computer, like, I saw it, like, and there was, he had videos of him with these children, and you could see the women, their faces kind of covered, whether they're holding up something over their face. But there's a grown woman sitting in the room.
And he's showing you this?
Yeah. Because he was showing me the kind of stuff that he does to see if I'm interested in making a business deal.
So, and I mean, I've just spoken with you on the phone, but I imagine just, you know, you're a Marine, you're younger. You're probably an intimidating looking guy.
Relatively.
And you talk very, you know, straightforward, very authoritatively.
Yeah.
You'd have thought that he's like, there's no fucking way.
That was
Seem the type, just me talking with you, that he would trust you enough. But this guy must have been so whacked and complacent.
Yeah, and the thing is, he was an older guy, about 60 years old. And the thing that threw me off is when I showed up, I was in all black. Black BDU pants, combat boots, the whole nines. Because I had just got done with a different job that was given to the police. And I was literally in the county and I had found him, replied, he answered me, and all this was done within a couple hours. And I went, so I walked in, you'd think, like, looking at a guy like me, like, I'm 6 foot tall, 200 pounds, covered in tattoos, and I'm a relatively intimidating looking guy to these kind of people.
Yeah.
And you'd think that I'm either there to hurt you, or I'm undercover, or something of that matter.
Well, but you probably look like a cop. Is kind of what I'm getting at.
I do have a very cop look.
You and, look and talk like a cop. And I've gotten that before.
Yeah, and this guy, he was nonchalant. He didn't care. He started showing me, so I was like, okay, cool. This will be fun. I was like, all right, hey, well, let me go think about it a little bit, and I'll give you a call back. He said, okay, cool. I walked out to the car, got whatever I needed again. I went back in the house. And it was a fun night for me.
What happened?
I walked back up, knocked on the door. He opened it and said that was a quick decision. And at that point, I didn't say another word to him. I grabbed him up under the neck enough to almost pick him up off the ground. Like when I had grabbed and pushed at the same time, like at his neck. So he kind of lifted up a little bit, went back, fell. Older, like I said, he's an older gentleman. Not gentleman, but he's an older guy. And I picked him up. He hit the ground, got back up, and I had picked something. I don't remember what it was I picked up off his counter, but I had hit him across the side of the face with it. And it looked like he had shattered his jaw area completely. And then I proceeded to beat him down, pretty much. I beat him down, and then I took my K-bar, the same one that I've used on several people and the one that I had overseas, and I put it in his mouth, and I kneed it.
Jesus.
To where it kind of went to where the handle was all the way into his mouth on a 9-inch knife.
Was this were you in rage at that point, or were you just steadfast?
No, I was just kind of doing my thing. I was kind of nonchalant about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Gives me like a Dexter vibe.
Yeah, it was kind of, I mean, yeah, that's a fitting comparison.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, how did you feel after that?
Accomplished.
I mean, were you worried at all? Like, I just fucking killed a dude here. Like,
no, I wasn't.
Like, what I did was just illegal.
It didn't concern me.
You didn't care.
No.
That was more important, taking this guy out.
Yes, it was. Because him, I could confirm that many, many, many children were being hurt.
I mean, obviously, you took a scumbag out of the world. Based on what you're telling me, I didn't see any of this, but based on what you're telling me, you took a scumbag out of the world.
Exactly. He's no longer wasting the air of our children. And it's weird, like, after probably a year and two or so of doing this, I experienced another guy that almost was the exact same, which was like, oh, this is a little throwback. Same thing. He did shoots for children, same county and everything, which led me to believe they were potentially associated with each other. And it turns out that the guy that I went and saw again that was doing a very similar thing was significantly worse than the first guy. The first guy took pictures and that kind of thing. This guy filmed himself doing things to the kids. And he would refer to it as like lessons. Like he would teach kids how to do things. Like he taught I think it was an 8-year-old little girl how to give head. Is what he was saying to me.
That's disturbing as fuck, man.
And when I found this guy, I had so much stuff going on, so many projects I was working on, and I didn't have the time or the energy to go and necessarily take his life or do anything. It was more like I was like, I'm not in the mood to really go get bloody right now. So I went ahead, I went to the place, reviewed the content that he had, and I had police on standby for it, and I went in with one of their cameras, actually, and recorded as much as I could. Then they got the warrant, kicked his door in, and went in and arrested him. And they ended up making, I want to say it was somewhere around 18 arrests off of him. Wow. And it was a little child porn ring that he was running.
Wow.
And they ended up being able to bust that little ring.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
It was a huge, huge accomplishment. Definitely a very large accomplishment. By this point, I had already been doing it for so long. I had a routine. I had a set way. Because in the beginning, the first probably 6 months, I was still figuring out my, like, not the motive, but I was figuring out the way I wanted to do things, how I wanted to go about it, that kind of thing, how I wanted to trap the people. Like, I was still learning a bit, you know, like kind of figuring out the way I'm doing things.
Yeah.
And by this point with this guy, I had already had that set. I'm already done. As far as I'm concerned, I'm doing this. I'm damn near a professional at this. If not, I am a professional in this subject. And I had probably put 40 or so people behind bars and probably another 25 to 30 in the ground by this point. So I'm at this point now, it's like it's second nature to me. I'm good at it. I know what I'm doing. But in the beginning, I was still figuring it out. So like the first guy that was doing the child porn that I killed, that was more of like, yeah, that happened. I feel good. I'm accomplished. But how am I going to cover this up later? Like, I wasn't concerned. It didn't concern me at all. I was like, hey, I did good. If they find me, I don't give a fuck. Like, I did what I needed to do.
Yeah.
But I was still learning how to successfully do everything.
What kind of things did you learn?
I learned better ways to plan the meet and greets, better ways to find the people, better ways to assess how I'm going to essentially ruin their life or take it, and then better ways to actually take life if that's the best route in that situation. And then I kind of came down to it, like how it was, it became an obsession. It was for a long time, and it was having like I need to do something that's like a signature. You know, it was kind of weird, like little, I was like, man, I'm not like that kind of serial killer though, so I don't want that kind of thing. But at the same time, I was like, I want something to where it kind of signals to other people like this of, hey, I'm out here looking for you. And I would have little things that I would do to them before I would take their life or whatever I'm going to do. Like my favorite thing is when I would find somebody or get them, I would make them either call the police and report themselves or call their closest family member and tell them before I show them the Reaper that is sitting in front of them. Like I'm going to make them expose the monster that they are before I introduce them to the monster that I am. And most of them opted to call the police. They wanted to call the cops and report it to the cops themselves. But that was always the wrong decision.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I'm going to make you call your family.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm giving you the option so you feel like you have a choice, but you really don't. And because 9 times out of 10, the cops aren't going to get called. You're going to turn up somewhere in a hog farm or somewhere in a lake. You're not calling police. Police are not getting involved with you. You're mine. And I always found it amusing. Like, it was a little psycho part of me. I found amusing watching them break down on the phone, having to tell a family member. Now, given my heart went out to the family member that they called, because they have to find out that that loved one of theirs is doing these kind of horrific things. However, I enjoyed watching their face having to tell the people.
Yeah.
Like, the last one I made do that, he called his wife of 26 years.
Well,
and had to tell her. He had a history of sexual assault on children. He was one that was confident when he met up with me. He had supposedly been with several other teenagers, a couple girls in the neighborhood, and he was a teacher. So it was like a whole mix of things, and he had stories and stories on stories about supposed children that he had had sexual relations with. How many were true, I don't know. But as far as I'm concerned, those are the stories he told. And there was a young girl in his family, I think like a niece or something like that, that he had assaulted. And when he called his wife, he had told her, hey, I'm here to meet up and have sex with this child. I have done it this many times in the past, and I did it to this family member.
Jeez.
And then I would interrupt the phone call. He's mine now, and I'd hang up.
Jesus. I mean, that's just, it sounds like a fucking movie. Like, that's a wild story.
But after doing it for so long now I still do it a lot.
I mean, you still seem nonchalant in a way about it. Like,
yeah, after,
like methodical. Like, yeah, talking with you about it. Like, you're just describing very matter of fact.
Yeah, I mean, there's been times, but it was in the beginning where I was like, I'm going to get like in a lot of trouble one day. But then after doing it enough, it just becomes like, it's just a hobby. It's a daily task. It's just a little side thing I like to do for fun.
Are you getting complacent? Like the first guy? Are you getting
complacent? Absolutely not.
No.
No, the way I do things now are the way I've always done things. The same steps, precautions, everything I still take. I just have less thought about it after now. Like now I can go home, eat a meatball sub and go to bed with my family and not think twice about it. Versus before, there would be periodic times I'd go home and I'd sit and think about it a little bit, like, damn, what if like he gets found somewhere, I get in trouble. But now it's turned into a point of like I've gotten really good at it, to where it's like, I'm doing my thing, I don't really care. And I still take the same precautions, I do what I gotta do, and I go home at the end of the night and call it a day and on to the next.
Have you ever been questioned?
Yes, I have.
Wow. And no evidence, or they just didn't follow through on it?
No, it never got followed through. But I have been questioned on it.
Is there an element to the fact that your victims, so to speak, are pedophiles that maybe they don't care as much?
What do you mean?
So if somebody was investigating a murder, and maybe they're not looking into it as much because the guy was a pedophile.
Oh, absolutely. I think that definitely plays a part in it.
Yeah. It's not like an honor roll student or something.
Exactly. And I, I mean, there's still those cops out there that'll still look heavy on it, and they're just trying to do their job, you know, and I respect it. But at the end of the day, get out of my way. Like, I'm doing the job that you can't do right now, so just stay out of my way. Let me do what I got to do. I've been questioned before, though. And it wasn't a matter of more of, like, they were wondering if I knew anything about the situation. I wasn't a suspect of the situation. Because I got really good at being able to cover my ass. And I've been questioned because I was at a location. And it was interesting because it wasn't like a cop rolled up right after it happened. Like, they didn't get a call. They didn't find them. It was like a cop had just pulled up to park somewhere right when I was leaving that location. And the cop had gotten out of their car for a minute, and I don't know how they noticed something was off. Maybe the ground roughed up in a couple spots, but they went back and found it and then called in that my vehicle was at that location. They called me, and I was like, no, I just stopped back there for a few minutes. Like, I was just part of listening to music for a little bit. But I had a cop pull up on me right after one time, and that part, my heart dropped a little bit. I was like, damn, I'm about to be done. but it didn't end up going anywhere, because afterwards, that guy in particular was a registered offender. So once they looked into him, saw who he was, it was kind of easy to determine, okay, somebody probably did this to him because of that. And they had assumed it was a family member of the person he'd assaulted. And so it kind of got dusted under.
Wow. So I know that there's, and I've seen, you know, videos and read about, there's other groups and there's other people that do this. And I've seen a lot of them where they seem like they're just trying to get views, or, you know, they're going after, I guess what you'd almost call some pretty lame suspects. Some pretty lame kind of people. Targets. And they seem to be just like harassing them for views, like going to their house and yelling at them. And
I can't stand those kind of people.
You think that's just bullshit and fluff?
Yeah. I think.
I mean, does it at least send a message and maybe scare some people off of it?
No. And I don't think it does personally. I think if anything, nobody really takes them seriously. Because if I was one of those people, I wouldn't take them seriously. Like, I feel like they get trolled a lot online. Yeah. But, and guys like that need to stay out of guys like my way.
So there's other people that do what you do?
Yeah. There are several. I've experienced them. It was a weird thing. I actually bumped into one. We were there to do the exact same job, but we were there for each other because we had kind of pinned each other online.
I was just going to fucking ask that. I was just going to, did you ever come across like another guy who was fishing?
Yeah, we did. And we met up, walked up on each other ready to like, and we were both like, had gear on, and we looked at each other kind of confused. And I was like, what the fuck? And I kind of called it off the bat. I was like, he's not here for that. He's here for me. And we were like, what the fuck? And had a quick, brief conversation about the subject and kind of, hey, this is my area. Leave me the fuck alone. Stay out of my way type thing. Because a lot of guys like this, we don't
it
like
to work together. It wasn't a friendly conversation.
No. A lot of guys like that do this stuff, we don't work together. We don't like to work together because it's a liability. I don't like to. I work in teams in the military. I don't want to do teams now. I like doing my thing now. I can get in, get out, and I don't got to worry about somebody else. Or if that person slips up one day or fucks up, now I can get in trouble for it.
To yourself. So,
yeah, so a lot of us do our own thing solo. The people that work together usually have association with an organization, like a big nonprofit or something that's got a name attached to it. And those kind of guys, I respect them. I love what they do. And I would help them if I could, like in a way that it's possible, but we have very different goals. Like they're like a lot of those kind of guys that go overseas, they go rescue children, get out, do their thing, which is needed. And I love that they do it. I'm out to take the life of the people doing it though. But I've bumped in on one occasion to a guy that was out doing the same thing. And I know of other people doing it. We just don't, like, we respect each other, but we don't work together. Like, we know of each other. We've talked on occasion. We have each other's information. If if, say, for example, there's something that we need help with, but for the most part, we know of each other and we know where each other are doing different things and how to, and to kind of stay out of each other's way, if that makes sense. Like, I know of a guy that kind of does a lot in the Orlando area. I don't fuck with his area. If I'm looking at something, I will reach out. Hey, are you looking into this? That guy's in this area. Cool. There you go. And vice versa. But we stay out of each other's way and let each other do what we need to do.
So these guys are, I mean, the suspects, so to speak, they're pretty known then. Like, you and a couple other people that do what you do might be looking at the same people.
Yeah.
So they make themselves apparent.
Yeah, it's very possible that more than one guy of guys like me could be looking at the same guy. It does not happen often, but I've only experienced it once or twice, but it's potential. But there's also guys that I've gone after that they may have never even heard of. There's guys they go after that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
But there's those guys sometimes that are a little bit bigger fish in the sea that sometimes we might both be out on a charter fishing for the same fish, you know?
Have you ever, or do you feel like you've ever gotten the wrong guy?
No.
You never made a mistake?
No.
So you're always 1,000% sure.
Yeah, I don't even consider going after somebody unless...
You don't have the wrong name, you don't have the wrong address.
No, I usually don't go to their houses. That's a rare occasion. I usually try to meet somewhere else because I don't know if their neighborhood has cameras, Ring doorbells, something that could link me there.
So you have them active and out and seeking. So it's not like you just showed up at some dude's house that had the same... Somebody stole his picture.
Exactly. You
know, from Facebook.
Yeah, I want to catch them while they're hunting.
I can imagine that's... It's probably pretty, I wouldn't say it doesn't happen often, but I'd probably say that would, if someone's like maybe a little paranoid and you're, you know, out there fishing and you're like, send me a picture of you. And then they just go find some random dude's picture.
I've had that happen.
Yeah.
And I've had that happen. And I can pick those kind of guys out of the crowd. I reverse image search all the pictures that are sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
You go online, I forget what the website's called, but you can just type in reverse image search and put in any picture that's sent to you on it, and it'll tell you where that picture came from, or if it has zero results, like it was a picture that's actually, that's an authentic picture. Or if it's on any website, it searches over 50 million websites. If that picture is on any other platform anywhere, it'll come up.
Okay.
And so I can kind of pinpoint those relatively quickly.
Yeah.
But for the most part, those kind of guys don't send pictures of their face. It's usually... nude pictures.
That's got to be disgusting. It's got to be disgusting to not only have to talk but see stuff like that.
Yeah, it is. And I don't like going to people's house. I like catching them in the act, you know, trying to hunt or find something. Because at the end of the day, if I go into their house, I'm going into their house to take their life. I'm not going to go to the house of somebody who I'm not going to try to end. And I don't need the risk of children or family members being home that are innocent, have nothing to do with it, being in the crossfire.
Yeah. So you're more like alone in a parking lot at night.
Yeah. I've gotten people to meet me at beaches, parks, hotels, everything.
Yeah.
Just not at their house. I'll go to their house if I know for a fact it's a single lone person, or if it's a person that I've been vetting for a long time and I've had time to watch their movement, find out where they work, follow their vehicle, see what they do on a daily basis, that kind of thing. Then once I find out, okay, yeah, I've been to your house a few times. I've walked through your house. I know that you live alone. I know the layout of your home already. I've been in your house. I've been in your job. I've been a customer of yours at some point just to get to know you a little bit. Or I've even applied to a job before and gotten a job with a person to get close to them. I've taken various steps to get people. But I vet them very, 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 very thoroughly before I even consider, so that I know for a fact there's no chance that I'm risking the life or career of somebody who did nothing wrong.
Does anyone else that's close to you know that you do this?
Two people in my life know about it.
Okay. And they're supportive?
Yeah. They know about it, but they don't know about it, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no. Plausible deniability.
Exactly.
And then, I mean, you're still able to hold a job and...
Yeah. You know, I live
normal, a double life. Do normal. Yeah. Man.
Yeah, I'll go out one night and... I'll go out one night and take a life. Next morning, I'm going to Busch Gardens with my daughter. Having a fun family day, clocking back into work the next day.
Does that worry you that it's that easy to switch?
I've thought about it. I've thought about it in the past. But then I've thought about the situation-dependent thing that a lot of law enforcement, a lot of people that are looking into it, if they've seen me, and I'm sure there's some officer or agent out there that knows of me. But... respects what I do, and they kind of just stay back.
So, what's something, so if anyone hears this, that's, you know, possibly one of your next victims, that they're into pedophilia, they're into young kids, whatever, what's something, before they start making that decision and go down that road, what's something you'd want to pass a message to them?
You won't know I'm coming for you until it's too late. There won't be a sign that I'm there until I'm there. And once I'm there, you can't get away from me.
So knock it the fuck off, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Don't go down that road.
Is there somebody that could be listening right now that I'm looking at? I got my eyes on a few people right now. Mm-hmm. So, and they won't know until it's time to, you know, say your last words. And then the thing I would say to those people, once I'm on you, you can't get away. You can't escape me. If I know your name, I know your face, you're done. There's no, I will be your nightmare. I will be the reaper that comes for you. You cannot get away from me. I will be the death card. I am the death card for those people.
I mean, that's, yeah, knock it the fuck off.
Yeah.
Stop it. It's not a road you want to go down.
I had a guy that caught on to me one time because I experienced him face to face, but I let him walk because I had the idea that it was a first time thing. I let him walk. I mean, he didn't walk like in perfect condition again, but he walked nonetheless somewhat. Well, he walked after therapy and all that, but he walked again. And he dipped out of Florida, went to Georgia. I found out where he was, and I went to his house, and I put a card in his front door and left. Came back down to Florida. Just as like a, hey, I still know where you are. You can't get away.
So don't fuck up again.
Yeah, pretty much. If you fuck up again, you're going to see me. Yeah, if I'm coming after you, you're not going to know until it's too late. And once I'm on to you, you can't get away. You're done. And I've taken... like I said, vast amounts of effort, and I've done extensive things to get close to people. I've gotten jobs with people just to learn about them. I've gone to their place of business, became a customer, became a regular there, just to get to know them a little bit, and then do what I got to do. Wow. I take various large steps to take care of what I need to take care of. But if somebody of that type is listening, knock it off. Because I'm not the one you want coming after you.
And there's other people like you.
Yes. There's a lot of people like me. There's several through the state of Florida, several through the country that I know of. And they're very highly trained people, very good. They're good at what they do. So if you don't want somebody like that visiting and popping in and saying hi to you, then stop what you're doing before it's too late.
It's a fucking boogeyman story.
I'm a nightmare for the people that hurt children. If you don't want to suffer for the rest of your life, if I let you have it, don't do anything else.
Is there anything you'd want to say to victims?
I'm sorry for what you've gone through. And there's guys like me that are here to help you. And if I haven't found you yet, I'll get you.
Yeah.
If there's a victim listening, somebody that's experience as somebody that's going through it, it won't be much longer and we'll get to you.
It's a powerful message. Well, thank you for coming on and sharing this.
Of course.
I mean,
I hope it reaches the right group of people.
Yeah, to come out with all of that information and to share that story, I think is something that people need to hear.
I think it absolutely is. I think it's important that people in their day-to-day life understand that this is a very large problem, like in the United States and the state. And it's people that 10 times out of 10, 100% of the time, it's somebody that you wouldn't have expected.
Yeah.
It's your family member. It might be your father, your brother, your cousin, your neighbor, your coworker. It's somebody you wouldn't expect that's doing these kind of things. So be careful who you let your kids around, who you surround yourself with, because when they come into the light, it's going to be somebody that's going to make your jaw drop. And I will bring them into the light and I will make jaws drop, but it will be somebody that shocks you.
Well, thanks again, man. Thanks for coming on, and hopefully this sharing this does some good in the world, but I appreciate it. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that appreciate it too.
I hope so. I hope it reaches who it needs to reach, and I hope it gets to where it needs to get and sends a good message. I'd like to see my numbers drop.
I think that's like everybody's hope, you know, like a homicide detective.
Yeah.
I want less homicides.
Because I'm not going to stop. I'm going to still come at it with everything I got until it does. So I hope it gets to the right people. And if anybody's listening, knock it the fuck off.
Well, good shit, brother. God bless.
God bless.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you liked it, make sure that you go ahead and subscribe to us. That helps. We need to build our redacted army up here. Also, give it a rating. Whatever platform you're listening on, give it a thumbs up, give it a 5 stars. That helps. That helps tremendously. That helps smaller shows like ours to grow. And it's decentralizing the information, decentralizing your media. And we would really appreciate it. Like, subscribe, review. Thank you.